This is a Shift Podcast Network production.
Welcome to Here and Back Again. I'm David O'Callaghan, and this is a podcast looking at all things releasing weekly on streaming and in cinemas, with a bit of pop culture bits thrown in. Now, I'm not going to lie, I'm still feeling slightly man flu-y. I know, it's the bane of my life, and I've still got a bit of a foss drop in my throat. But, again, like last week, this week's content drops are so good, I will soldier on like the trooper that I am. Yes, not all heroes wear capes. Instead, they have a cup of Lemsip in their hand. So, shall we begin?
3, 2, 1. We're off the air. What's happening?
Someone's in the system.
Get that music turned off!
UBA has been the target of a cyber attack.
This hack is nuclear.
Certain things may come to light.
Did you ever tell anybody?
Personal things that were never meant to be shared.
Let all the secrets come out. They did not protect me.
They didn't protect you, but I did.
Ah, yes. Who doesn't love a comfort blanket in the form of a TV show? Which, you have no idea why you are watching it, but it's just there and you appreciate its ridiculousness. Ridiculousness? Yes. Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon return for The Morning Show Season 3 on Apple TV Plus, and a nation goes hurrah! With, and just like that, having just left our lives, thank the Lord, we have another show to shout at on a weekly basis. I kind of liked Season 1, I thought it was pretty good, but Season 2 was an absolute shocker. And we're not going to blame the pandemic on that. We possibly could blame Jennifer Aniston's abysmal acting. Oh my God, she went to a new level. New level there, Jen. What's going on? But ultimately, why wouldn't you like a show which gives us an over-the-top look at what it is possibly like to work on Good Morning America? This season feels like a more back-to-basics, if there's such a thing as back-to-basics on The Morning Show, as Aniston's Alex Levy and Witherspoon's Bradley Jackson face a cyber attack. Oh yes, sure, why not? And possibly an even bigger threat in the form of tech giant Paul Marks, played by new cast member John Hamm. Oh my God, the hits keep on coming, rolling on. As they say, the future of the network is thrown into question and loyalties are pushed to the brink, which can only mean Billy Crudup is going to be in flying form yet again. What is not to be excited about? Muck, quality muck of the highest order. That's The Morning Show Season 3, which is now on Apple TV Plus.
Look, we're looking at the documentary right there. Hi, documentary.
Rob and I came together to purchase a football club.
Everything is going exactly the way we want it to go.
And then we lost in the semifinal.
This was not in the Hollywood script.
But now millions of people are following and watching, which we didn't have before.
A lot of expectation.
Oh my God, the expectation. Dear God.
Welcome to Wrexham.
We have a new season on the horizon.
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes.
Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds return for some Welsh footy drama in Welcome to Wrexham Season 2, which is now on Disney Plus. Having missed out on promotion by the slimmest of margins last season, the millionaire underdogs must go again in the hope that their investment can finally give them the success and return to the big boys' table that they crave. More than just a footy documentary, this engrossing fly-in-the-wall look at the highs and lows of running a football club is must-see TV, and not just for sports balls fans. Also, due to their newfound TV fame, we can definitely expect a lot of positive feedback from rival fans throughout the season. Anyway, I'm all in. I wonder what's going to happen. Hollywood story, never. That's Welcome to Wrexham Season 2, which is now on Disney Plus. I do love it, in fairness.
On a typical day at John F. Kennedy Airport, there are thousands of people going hundreds of places.
Excuse me, sorry.
My battery keeps dying.
Borrow mine if you want.
But today, a girl and a boy will meet.
Sorry, I don't share electronics till the third date.
Okay. No, I suppose it is quite intimate.
And it will change everything.
Over the next 6 hours and 47 minutes, Hadley Sullivan and Oliver Jones will fall in love.
This is me.
Well, this is unexpected.
Ah, yes. The hits just keep on coming. I love it. What a week. So, in Love at First Sight on Netflix, on their flight from New York to London, Hadley, played by Hayley Lou Richardson, and Oliver, played by Ben Hardy, meet cute and fall in love with each other. Just like that. 7 hours and they're in. Beautiful. Beautiful stuff. However, they lose each other at customs, no numbers are exchanged, and the possibility of ever meeting each other again seems improbable. But destiny or density may have a way of changing the odds. I'm sure they could find each other. Based on the absolutely fab Jennifer E. Smith's wonderful young adult novel, The Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight. I can see why they went with the shorter name, but I'm kind of sad. This one also stars Jameela Jamil and Rob Delaney. I'm a big fan of Hayley Lou, whom we recently saw in White Lotus Season 2. And what's with her and English boyfriends? That West Ham guy, he was dodgy. And also, she was in the YA adaptation of 5 Feet Apart. And yes, as you can tell, I'm quite excited by this. I'm so here. I feel like this is a cut above the normal rom-com crap that the streamers feed us and keep throwing at us, and it could be yet another YA smash hit for Netflix, like The Kissing Booth or To All the Boys movies. That's just me now. Maybe it's my romantic mood or the vibes, but I am all in. I am prepped. Love at First Sight. Bring it on now on Netflix.
So, what's your big goal, dream?
I want to be an astronaut.
Oh my God, you're serious. Okay.
I've wanted this for almost 30 years.
Ma, ¿por qué sirven las estrellas?
Every decision I've made with the space program in mind.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Jose Hernandez, sir. I'm an engineer.
You're the new guy, right? That third floor men's room needs toilet paper.
New movie A Million Miles Away on Prime Video traces the decades-long true story of Jose Hernandez, from his origins in a family of migrant farm workers from Mexico to eventually taking a job on the International Space Station as a NASA flight engineer. Michael Pena and Rosa Salazar star in this uplifting story of one man's battle against all the odds. Folks, I'm fairly confident you may need tissues, as blubbing will be guaranteed. That's A Million Miles Away, now streaming on Prime Video.
OVW is the little engine that could. You get outside of WWE and AEW, the best wrestling in America is taking place right here.
You want to go one-on-one with me?
Yeah, baby!
People watch OVW because you get the first glimpse at potentially the next big thing in pro wrestling.
It all comes down to one thing. One of the most legendary professional wrestlers ever, Al Snow.
In the new sports entertainment documentary Wrestlers on Netflix, Greg Whiteley, the co-creator, director, and man who gave us such wonders as Last Chance U and Cheer, tells another story of small-time athletes fighting to keep their dreams alive in and around Louisville, Kentucky. The OVW, or Ohio Valley Wrestling, over the years has been the birthing ground for such wrestling superstars as Brock Lesnar, John Cena, Dave Bautista, The Miz, and Randy Orton. But in recent years, sadly, has come under difficult times. In steps retired WWE wrestler Al Snow to see if he can change their fortunes and unearth some new superstars. As much a story about small town America as it is about wrestling, if you've seen Last Chance U or the cheerleading show Cheer, then you'll know the show you'll be getting. And yes, sweeping music, beautiful stories, you'll be absolutely invested in the characters who are real people, and hooked. You'll be hooked. So that is Wrestlers, which is now on Netflix.
Having the courage to fight for who you are. Oh! Being unapologetically yourself. That's my role.
Jason, you have no idea what you mean to this city.
He'll go out there and see everything on a football field, but he cannot find his keys if they're in his pocket.
If I was a Super Bowl ring, where would I be?
So much sport. So much quality sport this week. Anyway, for any Eagles fans out there, or indeed NFL fans, enjoying the return of the new season, Kelce on Prime Video is a new movie documentary about NFL All-Pro center Jason Kelce. Originally planned to document what he thought was his final year in the NFL, instead the film captures the most epic year in Jason's life. From starting a hit podcast with his brother Travis, who also plays for the Chiefs, Jason's wife Kylie being pregnant with their third child, and back to the brother who, yes, as I mentioned, played for the Chiefs and whom he ultimately met at the Super Bowl for one final showdown. What the hell? This dude is absolute value for money all the way. So that's Kelce, which is now on Prime Video. Fitting into the category of slightly odd and slightly weird, but definitely one to watch, El Conde, or The Count on Netflix, asks us to imagine a world in which the famous fascist Chilean dictator Augusto Pinochet is still alive, because he is an unhappy 250-year-old vampire. What? This black satirical comedy comes from director Pablo Larraín, who gave us Spencer and Jackie, very, very good movies. And well, if you're looking for something a bit weird and in black and white from the non-English section of your streaming catalogue, then this is your must-see arthouse movie of the week. Absolute batshit crazy, quite appropriately. So that's El Conde, or The Count, which is now on Netflix.
If you'd have seen us, you'd have hated us. This perfect happy couple. Charming husband. Loving wife. Finally, I could just be me. That was my mistake.
It's the trip of a lifetime.
Well? Are you going to introduce us?
The Wilderness on Prime Video is a UK thriller based on the novel by B.E. Jones, which centres on a British couple, Liv, played by Jenna Coleman, and Will, played by Oliver Jackson Cohen, who are living in America when their relationship hits a major snag following an affair. Uh-oh. He suggests a trip through America's national parks as a fix, but she has only one goal in mind. Revenge. Oh Lord, this dark and brooding thriller series looks like a whole lot of danger, danger fun. I'm in. Give it to me. That's Wilderness, which is now streaming on Prime Video.
Nella, there's someone you have to meet. This is Hazel Mae McCall, my new assistant. Really? Hi. It's just really nice that you're here.
Right back at you. Laser. You know that hall of white people they have here?
Welcome to Wagner.
Wagner's just... you'll see.
The Other Black Girl is a comedy-drama mystery thriller series based on the 2021 novel of the same name by Zakiya Dalila Harris. It focuses on Nella Rogers, who is an editorial assistant at a New York City publishing firm and the only black woman working for the company. That is, until the hiring of Hazel Mae McCall. Following the hiring of Hazel, strange occurrences begin and Nella must discover whether Hazel Mae is a friend or a foe. With many twists and turns, the story is inspired by author Harris's own personal experiences working as an editor and addresses various forms of racism in the corporate world. Looks like a stellar cracker series. That's The Other Black Girl, now on Disney+. For anyone who loves reality dating shows, and I know you are out there, you crazy folks, Written in the Stars on Prime Video is exactly what you think it's going to be. Oh Lord. It sees how well the astrological signs are matching up. The show puts the ideas of compatibilities to the test. There are 12 episodes with a single person representing each of the zodiac signs per episode. They will head out on dates with four bachelors or bachelorettes to see how they relate to the different zodiac signs. And then after initially eliminating someone, the single lead for the episode meets with an astrologer. Of course they do. and an astronaut probably, who watched each of the four dates to share their insights into chemistry and love. Absolute bananas in pajamas, if you ask me. But, as I said, you know who you are. And that's written in the stars, because it's waiting for you on Prime Video. Surviving Summer Season 2 returns to Netflix, giving off its Home and Away meets The Summer I Turned Pretty vibes. Expelled from school and exiled to Australia, a rebel New York teen from Brooklyn makes waves among a young surfer's inner circle and leaves, yes, a mess in her wake. Absolute YA hokum for all to enjoy. That's the Australian teen drama Surviving Summer Season 2, which is now on Netflix. And not to be overlooked this week, for those of you who missed Pixar's latest movie at cinemas, well, you can now sit back, relax, and turn on this week's Babysitter, as Elemental is now available on Disney+. In case you forgot, in a city where fire, water, land, and air residents live together, this one sees a fiery young woman and a go-with-the-flow guy discover something elemental. How much they actually have in common. While not exactly a must-see in cinema, this one, yeah, it was fine. You know, it's getting Pixar slowly back to where they were. But on streaming, it'll be an absolute smash, and it is the place to watch it. So, one that's definitely worth a look for both kids and adults. Have a little popcorn party and a few sneaky drinks in the back row. That is Elemental. I'll come shove now. Elemental is now streaming on Disney+.
Welcome to Taskmaster.
Your time starts
now.
Taskmaster returns for a new series and a new crop of competitors.
Hello there.
How's it going?
Some enjoy the nerdy tasks.
What's wrong with you?
Some are just here for the laughs.
I think my legs are actually arms without fingers.
Some have simply come for the eye candy.
Time for a montage.
Some of the most awkward television I've ever seen.
Yes, the brilliant and often hilarious Taskmaster returns to Channel 4 on Thursday the 21st for its 16th season. Oh my God, what a show, what a show. As per usual, we have five contestants, usually comedians, competing in a series of bizarre challenges presented to them by Greg Davies, the Taskmaster, and his assistant, Little Alex Horn. This season's guests are Julian Clary, Lucy Beaumont, Sam Campbell, Sue Perkins, and Susan Wacoma. So what is this madness? What is this madness you speak of? Well, made to partake in and complete some of the most bizarre tasks you'll ever see on TV, the competitors put themselves through every trial and tribulation in the hope that by the end of the series, they are named Taskmaster Champion and join such luminaries as Darrow Brin, Noel Fielding, Bob Mortimer, Liz Tarbuck, and Catherine Ryan. So that's Taskmaster Season 16, which starts on Thursday, September 21st on Channel 4. Also, there's a shedload of the seasons up now up on Netflix, so you can catch up on the old episodes. And also, Taskmaster's YouTube channel keeps showing loads of shit. So I encourage you to do it. Do it. You know you want to. Over on Disney Plus, Lang Lang Plays Disney is a musical and visual treat that showcases unique arrangements of Disney's most popular songs and gives insight into the life of world-renowned pianist Lang Lang. Through performance and documentary segments, the film opens an intimate window into his extraordinary musical journey as he speaks for his love for Disney, dating back to his childhood in China. In this one, he's joined by London's Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, and you get to savour such classics as Let It Go, We Don't Talk About Bruno, all the hits. That is Lang Lang Plays Disney, now on Disney+. For any glow-up fans out there, the reality competition returns for its fifth season to Netflix. In this competition show, aspiring makeup artists navigate colourful challenges to win a career-making opportunity in the beauty industry. Ah, yes. You're either in or you're out. That's Glow Up Season 5, now on Netflix. And Animals Up Close with Bertie Gregory on Disney+, sees the National Geographic photographer and filmmaker and his team armed with drones, state-of-the-art cameras and underwater tech as they brave sub-zero seas, climb snow-capped mountains and sleep suspended 120 feet in the air to reveal the challenges these animals endure, their fierce rivals and the threats they face on our changing planet. Definitely one for the nature doc heads out there. That's Animals Up Close with Bertie Gregory on Disney Plus. And finally this week, rounding off the streaming content, we have the non-English category. And first up, we have Erengard, The Art of Seduction, which is on Netflix. And this is a new Danish humorous period drama from Academy Award winner Billy August, pointed to teach the Grand Duchess's timid son the intricacies of seduction. A love connoisseur, as he likes to call himself, finds himself in a scandal and an unexpected romance of his own. Oh! Ah, yes, scandals ahoy indeed. So that's Erengard, The Art of Seduction, now on Netflix. Freestyle on Netflix is a Polish action thriller where, in need of cash for time in the recording studio, a rising rap star with a criminal past sets up a risky drug deal that could cost him everything. Sounds like nothing at all can go wrong with this plan. And that's the Polish thriller Freestyle, now on Netflix. Once Upon a Crime from Japan mixes fairy tales and the real world in this comedy thriller. While at the Royal Ball with Cinderella, Little Red Riding Hood finds herself in the middle of a mystery. Can she solve the case before midnight strikes? Intrigued? Well, if you are, Once Upon a Crime is now on Netflix. Thursday's Widows on Netflix is a new Mexican thriller series where Teresa finds her husband and his two best friends dead in the lavish community where they live. As the truth comes to light, so will the dark secrets that surround the once safe community. Oh, all sketchy if you ask me. That's Thursday's Widows now on Netflix. And finally on streaming this week and in the non-English section, we have the South African teen comedy Miseducation. After a public humiliation, a wannabe influencer enrolls in a small town university where she aspires to regain her social status. Yet again, surely nothing can go wrong. Or maybe everything. Anyway, that's Miseducation from South Africa, now on Netflix. And there you go. What did I say? Absolute shed loads of quality stuff there this week. My God, we're going to... We just need much bigger boats, really, to watch all this. So that is your streaming. Happy, happy days. Now we shall take a look at cinema.
Hercule Poirot, I've found something. I've looked at it from every which way. I am the smartest person I ever met, and I can't figure it out, so I came to the second.
You are up to something, my friend.
I've seen a million of these so-called psychics, each one a fake.
I do not believe in psychics.
Come with me to a seance. Spot the con I can't.
Detective, you are here to discredit me, but I can talk to the dead.
The new Kenneth Branagh horror mystery, A Haunting in Venice, sees Hercule Poirot now retired and living in his own exile in post-World War II Venice. He decides reluctantly to attend a séance, but yes, when one of the guests is murdered, it is up to the former detective to once again uncover the killer. Easily the best of Branagh's Poirot movies, the star wattage of the cast has been severely depleted for this one compared to previous outings, but hey, maybe that's a good thing, as it allows more budget for the beautiful Venetian settings. Now don't get me wrong, being better than the shockingly terrible Death in the Nile and the, not bad Murder on the Orient Express is not exactly success, but at least Branagh leans into the horror aspects of this murder mystery and they come across really well. Sadly though, Tina Fey has literally walked off the set of Only Murders in the Building and is quite distracting throughout. While poor old Jamie Dornan, oh my God, that lad is just pure ham and cheese. Ham and cheese. Oh. While the Knives Out franchise is currently wearing the murder mystery crown, here at least the multiple twists are fun. And if whodunits with an element of horror are your thing, then this one is definitely for you. So that's A Haunting in Venice, which is now in cinemas. And also out this week, we have Rally Road Racers, which is an animated movie that is kind of like a cross between Pixar's Cars and Wacky Races. A rookie race car driver gets the opportunity to compete against the reigning champion, and with the help of a former driver, he must overcome treacherous terrain, rival racers, and unexpected obstacles to prove he has what it takes. You know the deal. Meep meep, vroom vroom. Sharon Horgan, J.K. Simmons, John Cleese, and Jimmy O. Yang provide the voices. Listen, there hasn't been a new kids movie at the cinemas in ages, so maybe this won't be a nice distraction, especially if the weather starts to go crap again. So that's Rally Road Racers, now in cinemas. And that's your cinema? Yeah. That's all I'll say about that. Let's keep on moving. Let's see what else we got for you. Three things? No, we're not going to do three things because it is time. Yes, folks, it's time for the summer box office scorecard. The summer is over. The movies have been released. And while there were some home dingers, there were some major ham dingers. Oh, my God. So, yes, let's do it. We're going to have to go quick because there's a lot to get through. But let's take a look and see who got on the best. Obviously, yes, we'll start with Barbenheimer. God bless us all. So the way we'll do it is we'll look at production costs, marketing costs, and how much they made and if they made a profit. Simple as that. Barbie, well, you don't need to know that if this one made a profit because with production costs of $145 million, marketing spend of about, rumoured to be $150 million, so that's $300 million. And what does it do? It makes $1.4 billion worldwide. Holy crap! And when you do all the maths, and we talked about it before, about the this and the that and the these and the those, the studio is operating currently at a profit of $425 million. And that's just on theatrical release. Wow. Impressive work. Well done, Greta. Well done, Margot. Well done, Warner Brothers. Close behind, Oppenheimer, with a production cost of $100 million, marketing of about $100 million, and yes, Christopher Nolan's dodgy 20%, well, it's not even dodgy, his impressive 20% of the studio profits, which means he's getting about $90 million. So, in total, costs were about $290 million. And Oppenheimer so far has made $900 million worldwide, which means it's currently profiting in the theatrical window with $160 million and still rising. Just remember, that's for a three-hour adult drama about the making of the atomic bomb. Wowza! Wowza! So that's a big win for Universal and Christopher Nolan. Guardians of the Galaxy 3, production and marketing budgets of, very expensive, $350 million. Worldwide box office of $844 million, which means, yes, Marvel made a theatrical profit of about $72 million. I did all these numbers on my calculator, so they're as near as you can expect them to be. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, production and marketing of about $200 million, and currently, has made $686 million worldwide. So that is a profit of $143 million, which is pretty impressive for the theatrical window. So every bean it makes from here on is more big, juicy profit. Meg 2, The Trench. Oh my God, what a piece of nonsense that was. $210 million production and marketing budget. Made about $385 million with a big thanks to China. And currently sitting about $18 million off profit theatrically, which will obviously be hit thanks to China, as I said. Loving this movie. And then it'll definitely make a healthy profit thereafter from the ancillary markets like premium video on demand, etc, etc, etc. Now, from here on it all gets a bit sketchy. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. Well, how do we think that did? Well, with a production budget of $290 million and a marketing budget of about $110 million, so in total of $400 million, $560 million worldwide. Not even the best Mission Impossible. It's probably about the fourth best Mission Impossible, which is not a good look for Tom. So that's $120 million short of a theatrical profit. And while that probably doesn't sound very good, this will probably be crawled back to just about break-even, even from the ancillary market like PVOD, etc., which we talked about before. But it's just not a good look for Tom. And with the cost of Dead Reckoning Part 2 already spiralling out of control because of the strikes, it's more trouble ahead for this franchise, I fear. Although, no Barbenheimer next year might be a little help if it does get to be released. Elemental, coming in at a production and marketing budget of about $300 million. Oh, Pixar just can't keep those costs down. Made about $380 million worldwide. So that's currently sitting at minus $110 million in its theatrical release. Profit-wise, that's not, again, not a really great look. But I'm going to say, in fairness to Elemental, it had a shocker of a start worldwide at the box office. And at least it got the $380 million. And it does feel like Pixar is putting a bit of a fight back into its brand. And is one of the better performing Pixar movies of recent times. Now, oof, are you sitting down? Because Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, a production budget of $300 million, a marketing budget of about $100 million, and a worldwide box office of $370 million. There are no words to describe the hot mess and absolute shambles that was Indiana Jones. Currently sitting at a loss of about $215 million, nothing can save our hero now. This is a catastrophe for Disney, for Kathleen Kennedy at Lucasfilm, and for the franchise itself. It's officially toast, and no amount of extra markets can make this one profitable in any way. Oh, Dog-O-Rama. And sitting in the same coffin, and just as worrying for Warner, DC, and James Gunn, were the performances of the DC summer movies. The Flash, with a production budget and marketing budget in total of about $350 million, made the grand total of $267 million worldwide. For feck's sake, that is $187 million in the hole, and they're never getting out of it. This was another disaster, and if any hope was being pegged onto newcomer Blue Beetle, well, with a production and marketing budget of $165 million and a worldwide box office of $115 million, despite still being in cinemas, it's currently operating at a loss of $107 million and will be lucky to get out at a loss of $80 million. Ultimately, a profit is looking sketchy on this one. Heading towards the finish line, we have Fast X. Oh, Fast X. So despite making $715 million worldwide, sadly, it had a production budget of $340 million. And that's not even including marketing, which was another $100 million. So currently, despite what seemed like a successful run, it's minus $82 million profit-wise. And yes, it'll break even due to the markets beyond. But this franchise used to be a billion-dollar club member, and this is not a good look and doesn't bode well for Fast X Part 2 or that Rock spin-off movie or whatever the hell it's going to be. Into the final straight, right? Here we go. Right, running it quickly. Little Mermaid's production and marketing budget of $390 million. Not cheap, folks. Not cheap. And a $561 million worldwide box office. Which means, yes, The Little Mermaid in its theatrical run is minus $109 million. Pretty awful when you think that most live-action Disney movies all hit the billion-dollar club worldwide at the box office. So, yeah, another disappointment, but it can't be as bad as Haunted Mansion, which had a production and marketing budget of $250 million, made $101 million at the worldwide box office, eek, and is going to lose Disney nearly $200 million. What a horror show. They'll be haunted for years by the decision to remake this one. And it's going straight to Disney Plus and PVOD on the same day in October. So little money will be coming in from there. Heads, like in the mansion itself, will be rolling because of this tale of terror. Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. You remember that movie? Well, most people don't, because with a production budget of $70 million and marketing budget of $70 million, it brought in $42 million worldwide. That's nearly a loss of $120 million and one of the worst performances ever by a DreamWorks animated movie. Mm. Sketch, as we say, sketch. The last two were coming in, I swear to God. Transformers Rise of the Beasts, production and marketing budget of $300 million. Again, not exactly cheap. Brought in $438 million worldwide. Which basically means a loss of $80 million in the theatrical window, but it'll make up that in the next markets. And hey, all those Transformer toys they're going to sell, fine. But you know what? They've got to be disappointed. Bumblebee made more money worldwide, which is kind of embarrassing. But I personally love Bumblebee, and therefore I'm quite happy. And finally, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Mutant Mayhem. With a production and marketing budget of $140 million and a worldwide box office to date of $120 million, that's currently sitting at an $80 million loss. But at the end of it, yeah, probably end up with a 60 million or 50 million loss. And between later markets and beyond, and all that merch sales it's going to make for the toys, etc., profits are going to be an easy goal. So that's your scorecard. Some outright winners, as you can tell. And then it kind of, you know, after those top three or four, it falls off a bit of a cliff. And despite some of them just about making balance sheet work out for them, it's a pretty disappointing run of what I'd call big franchise movies just failing to deliver on their previous promises. And there you go. I do not apologise for my love of box office and numbers, and luckily you only get these roundups every now and then, but hey, maybe there's some weirdos out there too who appreciate the finer things in life, like successes and failures. So there you go. That's me done. What a week. Quality streaming. Some, yeah, okay cinema. And a roundup to beat the band. Are people going less to the cinema because they're watching on streaming? Or are the movies just crap? Who knows? Who knows? These are the questions we will bring to you every week, every day, every hour. I don't know what I'm talking about. It's time to ramble on. This is David O'Callaghan for the Here and Back Again podcast. Wishing you all the best. And until next week, stay safe and binge happy. Ah, yes. Well, hello. Greetings, my fellow post-credit traveller. Welcome yet again to the Thunderdome. I'm on my seventh cup of Lemsip, and I'm not going to lie, I'm buzzing. three things. We've done a little hop, skip and a jump into the post-credits world. Not because the news is quite low-key. Oh no, because there's always news. But because sometimes we like to go crazy. We like to shake things up and live on the wild side over here at Habba HQ. I know. We do know how to party. Absolute ragers. Hold on, just take a little. Ah, that's bass. Right, first up. And well, to all our US listeners, or the two of them, I'm very jealous. I'm so jealous because as summer closes, Walmart has announced it will be stocking 7 different tubs of Stranger Things Scoops Ahoy ice cream from September 13th. You feckers! I don't believe it. The complete list of flavours includes, wait for it, USS Butterscotch, Triple Decker Extravaganza even, Chocolate Pudding, Cinnamon Bun types, and 3 flavours from the Upside Down, Mint Flare, The Void, and Pineapple Upside Down. Oh, I'm drooling, lads. I'm drooling. The word is that the rest of the world will eventually get a taste, but more likely in 2024. So for now, we'll just have to drool over those US Instagram posts or possibly import it illegally. Yay! I would never encourage such a thing. And how melted would it be? Right, moving on. Story number 2. Okay, I'm telling you, the Lemsip's really kicking in now. The next story that caught my eye this week. Well, again, you can tell I'm in a chuckly mood. And this one did make me chuckle. And it kind of comes from a simpler time. Because Liam Neeson was recently on the Conan O'Brien podcast. And he recalled while making The Phantom Menace, he said, "The first time myself and Ewan McGregor actually had to use the lightsaber to start a little fight, we both automatically made the noises. So, to which George immediately shouted cut and wandered over and said, let's cut it there, lads. Come on, boys. We can add the noise later. So, the idea of the two lads giving it socks and George saying, what are you doing? Stop it. It's the little things in life. It made me laugh. That is Liam Neeson and Ewan giving it socks. And finally this week, the original cast members of the series Buffy the Vampire Slayer are returning for an Audible original story called Slayers, a Buffyverse Story. So this one is set in the same world as the original show and will focus on Spike James Masters as the protagonist. Premieres on Audible on October 12th. In addition to Marsers, returning cast members include Charisma Carpenter, Anthony Head, Juliette Landau, Emma Caulfield Ford, Amber Benson, James Charles Leary, and Danny Strong. Story-wise, it seemingly will be set 10 years after the TV show's finale. We will have a new young Slayer protege that Spike must babysit, and while he goes looking for a watcher to help him deal with this child Slayer, he stumbles across a Slayer from an alternative reality where Buffy Summers never existed as a Slayer and instead Cordelia is the one and only Slayer. Well, you can consider me intrigued. And there you go. Short, sweet, and to the point. That is us. That is us. We're all done. Get out of here. Just one more little sip there. Now a Scoops Ahoy Lemsip ice cream tub. Now that'll be something else. Be good. Talk soon.